Chapter 3. The Great Mistake. Sophie opened her eyes to find herself floating in a foul-smelling moat, filled to the brim with thick black sludge. A gloomy wall of fog flanked her on all sides. She tried to stand, but her feet couldn't find bottom, and she sank. Sludge flooded her nose and burnt her throat. Choking for breath, she found something to grasp and saw it was the carcass of a half-eaten goat. She gasped and tried to swim away, but couldn't see an inch in front of her face. Screams echoed above, and Sophie looked up. Streaks of motion, then a dozen bony birds crashed through the fog and dropped shrieking children into the moat. When their screams turned to splashes, another wave of birds came, then another, until every inch of sky was filled with falling children. Sophie glimpsed a bird dive straight for her, and she swerved, just in time to get a cannonball splash of slime in her face. She wiped the glop out of her eye and came face to face with a boy. The first thing she noticed was he had no shirt. His chest was puny and pale, without the hope of muscle. From his small head jutted a long nose, spiky teeth, and black hair that drooped over beady eyes. He looked like a sinister little weasel.
"The bird ate my shirt," he said. "Can I touch your hair?"
Sophie backed up.
"They don't usually make villains with princess hair," he said, dog paddling towards her.
Sophie searched desperately for a weapon, a stick, a stone, a dead goat.
"Maybe we could be bunkmates, or best mates, or some kind of mates," he said, inches from her now.
It was like Radley had turned into a rodent and developed courage. He reached out his scrawny hand to touch her, and Sophie readied a punch to the eye, when a screaming child dropped between them. Sophie took off in the opposite direction, and by the time she glanced back, Weasel Boy was gone. Through the fog, Sophie could see shadows of children treading through floating bags and trunks, hunting for their luggage. Those that managed to find them continued downstream towards ominous howls in the distance. Sophie followed these floating silhouettes until the fog cleared to reveal the shore, where a pack of wolves, standing on 2 feet in blood-red soldier jackets and black leather breeches, snapped riding whips to herd students into line. Sophie grasped the bank to pull herself out, but froze when she caught her reflection in the moat. Her dress was buried beneath sludge and yolk, her face shined with stinky black grime, and her hair was home to a family of earthworms. She choked for breath.
"Help! I'm in the wrong school!"
A wolf yanked her out and kicked her into line. She opened her mouth to protest, but saw Weasel Boy swimming towards her, yelping,
"Wait for me!"
Quickly, Sophie joined the line of shadowed children, dragging their trunks through the fog. If any dawdled, a wolf delivered a swift crack, so she kept anxious pace, all the while wiping her dress, picking out worms, and mourning her perfectly packed bags far, far away. The tower gates were made of iron spikes, crisscrossed with barbed wire. Nearing them, she saw it wasn't wire at all, but a sea of black vipers that darted and hissed in her direction. With a squeak, Sophie scampered through and looked back at rusted words over the gates, held between 2 carved black swans. "The School for Evil Edification and Propagation of Sin." Ahead, the school tower rose like a winged demon. The main tower, built of pockmarked black stone, unfurled through smoky clouds like a hulking torso. From the sides of the main tower jutted 2 thick, crooked spires, dripping with veiny red creepers like bleeding wings. The wolves drove the children towards the mouth of the main tower, a long serrated tunnel shaped like a crocodile snout. Sophie felt chills as the tunnel grew narrower and narrower, until she could barely see the child in front of her. She squeezed between 2 jagged stones and found herself in a leaky foyer that smelled of rotten fish. Demonic gargoyles, pitched down from stone rafters, lit torches in their jaws. An iron statue of a bald, toothless hag brandishing an apple smouldered in the menacing firelight. Along the wall, a crumbly column had an enormous black letter N painted on it, decorated with wicked-faced imps, trolls, and harpies climbing up and down it like a tree. There was a blood-red E on the next column, embellished with swinging giants and goblins. Creeping along in the interminable line, Sophie worked out what the column spelled out. N-E-V-E-R. Then suddenly found herself far enough into the room to see the line snake in front of her. For the first time, she had a clear view of the other students and almost fainted. One girl had a hideous overbite, wispy patches of hair, and one eye instead of two, right in the middle of her forehead. Another boy was like a mound of dough, with his bulging belly, bald head, and swollen limbs. A tall, sneering girl trudged ahead with sickly green skin. The boy in front of her had so much hair all over him, he could have been an ape. They all looked about her age, but the similarities ended there. Here was a mass of the miserable, with misshapen bodies, repulsive faces, and the cruelest expression she'd ever seen, as if looking for something to hate. One by one, their eyes fell on Sophie, and they found what they were looking for. The petrified princess in glass slippers and golden curls. The red rose among thorns. On the other side of the moat, Agatha had nearly killed a fairy. She had woken under red and yellow lilies that appeared to be having an animated conversation. Agatha was sure she was the subject, for the lilies gestured brusquely at her with their leaves and buds. But then the matter seemed settled, and the flowers hunched, like fussing grandmothers, and wrapped their stems around her wrists. With a tug, they yanked her to her feet, and Agatha gazed out at a field of girls, blooming gloriously around a shimmering lake. She couldn't believe what she was seeing. The girls grew right from the earth. First heads poked through soft dirt, then necks, then chests, then up and up, until they stretched their arms into fluffy blue sky and planted delicate slippers upon the ground. But it wasn't the sight of sprouting girls that unnerved Agatha most. It was that these girls looked nothing like her. Their faces, some fair, some dark, were flawless and glowed with health. They had shiny waterfalls of hair, ironed and curled like dolls, and they wore downy dresses of peach, yellow and white, like a fresh batch of Easter eggs. Some fell on the shorter side, others were willowy and tall, but all flaunted tiny waists, slim legs, and slight shoulders. As the field flourished with new students, a team of three glitter-winged fairies awaited each one. Chiming and chinkling, they dusted the girls of dirt, poured them cups of honeybush tea, and tended to their trunks, which had sprung from the ground with their owners. Where exactly these beauties were coming from, Agatha hadn't the faintest idea. All she wanted was a dour or disheveled one to poke through so she wouldn't feel so out of place. But it was an endless bloom of Sophies, who had everything she didn't. A familiar shame clawed at her stomach. She needed a hole to climb down, a graveyard to hide in, something to make them all go away. That's when the fairy bit her. "What the—" Agatha tried to shake the jingling thing off her hand, but it flew and bit her neck, then her bottom. Other fairies tried to subdue the rogue as she yowled, but it bit them too and attacked Agatha again. Incensed, she tried to catch the fairy, but it moved lightning quick, so she hopped around uselessly while it bit her over and over until the fairy mistakenly flew into her mouth, and she swallowed it. Agatha sighed in relief and looked up. 60 beautiful girls gaped at her. The cat in a nightingale's nest. Agatha felt a pinch in her throat and coughed out the fairy, To her surprise, it was a boy. In the distance, sweet bells rang out from the spectacular pink and blue glass castle across the lake. The teams of fairies all grabbed their girls by the shoulders, hoisted them into the air, and flew them across the lake towards the towers. Agatha saw her chance to escape, but before she could make a run for it, she felt herself lifted into the air by two girl fairies. As she flew away, she glanced back at the third, the fairy boy that had bitten her, who stayed firmly on the ground. He crossed his arms and shook his head, as if to say in no uncertain terms, there'd been a terrible mistake. When the fairies brought the girls down in front of the glass castle, they let go of their shoulders and let them proceed freely. But Agatha's two fairies held on and dragged her forward like a prisoner. Agatha looked back across the lake. Where's Sophie? The crystal water turned to slimy moat halfway across the lake. Grey fog obscured whatever lay on the opposite banks. If Agatha was to rescue her friend, she had to find a way to cross that moat. But first, she needed to get away from these winged pests. She needed a diversion. Mirrored words arched over golden gates ahead. The School for Good, Enlightenment, and Enchantment. Agatha caught her reflection in the letters and turned away. She hated mirrors and avoided them at all costs. Pigs and dogs don't sit around looking at themselves, she thought. Moving forward, Agatha glanced up at the frosted castle doors, emblazoned with two white swans. But as the doors opened and fairies herded the girls into a tight, mirrored corridor, the line came to a halt, and a group of girls circled her like sharks. They stared at her for a moment, as if expecting her to whip off her mask and reveal a princess underneath. Agatha tried to meet their stares, but instead met her own face reflected in the mirrors a thousand times and instantly glued her eyes to the marble floor. A few fairies buzzed to get the mass moving, but most just perched on the girl's shoulders and watched. Finally, one of the girls stepped forward, with waist-length gold hair, succulent lips, and topaz eyes. She was so beautiful she didn't look real.
"Hello, I'm Beatrix," she said sweetly. "I didn't catch your name."
"That's because I never said it," said Agatha, eyes pinned to the ground.
"Are you sure you're in the right place?" Beatrix said, even sweeter now.
Agatha felt a word swim into her mind, a word she needed, but was still too foggy to see.
Perhaps you just swam to the wrong school," smiled Beatrix.
The word lit up in Agatha's head. Diversion. Agatha looked up into Beatrix's dazzling eyes.
"This is the School for Good, isn't it? The legendary school for beautiful and worthy girls destined to be princesses."
"Oh," said Beatrix, lips pursed.
"So you're not lost?"
"Or confused," said another with Arabian skin and jet-black hair.
"Or blind,"
said a third with deep ruby curls.
"In that case, I'm sure you have your flower ground pass," Beatrix said.
Agatha blinked. "My what?"
"Your ticket into the flower ground," said Beatrix. "You know, the way we all got here. Only officially accepted students have tickets into the flower ground."
All the girls held up large golden tickets, flaunting their names in regal calligraphy, stamped with the schoolmaster's black and white swan seal.
"Oh, that flower ground pass," Agatha scoffed.
She dug her hands in her pockets.
"Come close, and I'll show you."
The girls gathered suspiciously. Meanwhile, Agatha's hands fumbled for a diversion. Matches, coins, dried leaves.
Closer?
Murmuring girls huddled in.
"It shouldn't be this small," Beatrix huffed.
"Shrunk in the wash," said Agatha, scraping through more matches, melted chocolate, a headless bird,
Reaper hid them in her clothes. It's in here somewhere.
Perhaps you lost it, said Beatrix.
Mothballs, peanut shells, another dead bird.
Or misplaced it, said Beatrix.
The bird, the match, like the bird with the match.
Or lied about having one at all.
Oh, I feel it now.
But all Agatha felt was a nervous rash across her neck.
You know what happens to intruders, don't you?
Beatrix said.
Here it is.
Do something. Girls crowded her ominously. Do something now. She did the first thing she thought of and delivered a swift, loud fart. An effective diversion creates both chaos and panic. Agatha delivered on both counts. Vile fumes ripped through the tight corridor as squealing girls stampeded for cover and fairies swooned at first smell, leaving her a clear path to the door. Only Beatrix stood in her way, too shocked to move. Agatha took a step towards her and leaned in like a wolf. Boo! Beatrix fled for her life. As Agatha sprinted for the door, she looked back with pride as girls collided into walls and trampled each other to escape. Fixed on rescuing Sophie, she lunged through the frosted doors, ran for the lake. But just as she got to it, the waters rose up in a giant wave and with a tidal crash, slammed her back through the doors, through screeching girls, until she landed on her stomach in a puddle. She staggered to her feet and froze.
Welcome, new princess, said a floating 7-foot nymph.
It moved aside to reveal a foyer so magnificent, Agatha lost her breath.
Welcome to the school for good.
Sophie couldn't get over the smell of the place. As she lurched along with the line, she gagged on the mix of unwashed bodies, mildewed stone, and stinking wolf. Sophie stood on her tiptoes to see where the line was headed, but all she could see was an endless parade of freaks. The other students threw her dirty looks, but she responded with her kindest smile in case this was all a test. It had to be a test, or glitch, or joke, or something. She turned to a grey wolf.
Not that I question your authority, but might I see the schoolmaster? I think he...
The wolf roared, soaking her with spit. Sophie didn't press the point. She slumped with the line into a sunken anteroom, where three black crooked staircases twisted up in a perfect row. One carved with monsters said, Malice, along the banister. The second, etched with spiders, said, Mischief, and the third, with snakes, read, Vice. Around the three staircases, Sophie noticed the walls covered with different coloured frames. In each frame, there was a portrait of a child, next to a storybook painting of what the student became upon graduation. A gold frame had a portrait of an elfish little girl, and beside it, a magnificent drawing of her as a revolting witch, standing over a comatose maiden. A gold plaque stretched under the two illustrations. Catherine of Foxwood, Little Snow White, Villain. In the next gold frame, there was a portrait of a smirking boy with a thick unibrow, alongside a painting of him all grown up, brandishing a knife to a woman's throat. Drogon of Murmuring Mountains, Bluebeard, Villain. Beneath Drogon, there was a silver frame of a skinny boy with shock blonde hair, turned into one of a dozen ogres savaging a village. Keir of Netherwood, Tom Thumb, Henchman. Then Sophie noticed a decayed bronze frame, near the bottom, with a tiny bald boy, eyes scared wide. A boy she knew. Bane was his name. He used to bite all the pretty girls in Gavaldon until he was kidnapped 4 years before. But there was no drawing next to Bane. just a rusted plaque that read, "Failed." Sophie looked at Bane's terrified face and felt her stomach churn. What happened to him? She gazed up at thousands of gold, silver, and bronze frames cramming every inch of the hall. Witches slaying princes, giants devouring men, demons igniting children, heinous ogres, grotesque gorgons, headless horsemen, merciless sea monsters. Once awkward adolescents, now portraits of absolute evil. Even the villains that had died gruesome deaths, Rumpelstiltskin, the beanstalk giant, the wolf from Red Riding Hood, were drawn in their greatest moments, as if they had emerged triumphant from their tales. Sophie's gut took another twist when she noticed the other children gazing up at the portraits in awed worship. It hit her with sick clarity. She was in line with future murderers and monsters. Her face broke out in a cold sweat. She needed to find a faculty member. Someone who could search the list of enrolled students and see she was in the wrong school. But so far, all she could find were wolves that couldn't speak, let alone read a list. Turning the corner into a wider corridor, Sophie saw a red-skinned, horned dwarf ahead on a towering stepladder, hammering more portraits into a bare wall. Her teeth clenched with hope as she inched towards him in the line. As she plotted to get his attention, Sophie suddenly noticed the frames on this wall held familiar faces. There was the hoggish doughboy she had seen earlier, labelled Brone of Roch Briar. Next to him was a painting of the one-eyed, wispy-haired girl, Arachne of Foxwood. Sophie scanned the portraits of her classmates, awaiting their villainous transformations. Her eyes stopped on Weasel Boys. Hort of Bloodbrook. Hort? Sounds like a disease. She moved ahead in line, ready to cry to the dwarf. Then she saw the frame under his hammer. Her own face smiled back at her. With a shriek, Sophie bolted out of line, fumbled up the ladder, and snatched the portrait from the stunned dwarf's fingers. "No! I'm in good!" she shouted. But the dwarf snatched it back, and the two tussled over the portrait, kicking and clawing, until Sophie had enough and gave him a slap. The dwarf screamed like a little girl and swung at her with his hammer. Sophie dodged it, but lost her balance, and the stepladder teetered and crashed between the walls. Splayed out on rungs in mid-air, she looked down at snarling wolves and goggling students. "I need the schoolmaster!" Then lost her grip, slid across the ladder, and landed in a heap at the front of the line. A dark-skinned hag with a massive boil on her cheek thrust a sheet of parchment into her hands. Sophie of Woods Beyond, Evil, First Year, Malice Tower, 66. Session 1. Uglification. Faculty, Professor Bilious Manley. 2. Henchman Training. Caster. 3. Curses and Death Traps. Lady Lesso. 4. History of Villainy, Professor August Seder. 5. Lunch. 6. Special Talents, Professor Sheba Sheeks. 7. Surviving Fairy Tales, Forest Group Number 3. Yuba the Gnome. Sophie looked up, dumbstruck.
"See you in class, Witch of Woods Beyond,"
the hag croaked. Before Sophie could respond, an ogre dumped a ribbon-tied sack of books in her hand. Best Villainous Monologues, 2nd edition. Spells for Suffering, Year 1. The Novice's Guide to Kidnapping and Murder. Embracing Ugliness Inside and Out. How to Cook Children, with New Recipes. The books were bad enough, but then Sophie saw the ribbon tying them was a live eel. She screamed and dropped the books before a spotted satyr foisted musty black fabric at her. Unfurling it,
Sophie shrank from a dumpy, tattered tunic that sagged like shredded curtains. She gaped at the other girls, gleefully putting on the putrid uniform, combing through their books, comparing schedules. Sophie slowly looked down at her own foul black robes, then at her eel-slimed books and schedule, then at her smiling, sweet portrait back on the wall. She ran for her life. Agatha knew she was in the wrong place because even the faculty gave her confused looks. Together they lined the four spiral staircases of the cavernous glass foyer, two of them pink, two blue, showering confetti upon the new students. The female professors wore different coloured versions of the same slim, high-necked dress, with a glittering silver swan crest over the heart. Each had added a personal touch to the dress, whether inlaid crystals, beaded flowers, or even a tulle bow. The male professors, meanwhile, all wore bright, slim suits in a rainbow of hues, paired with matching vests, narrow ties, and colourful kerchiefs tucked into pockets embroidered with the same silver swan. Agatha noticed immediately they were all more attractive than any adult she had ever seen. Even the older faculty was elegant to the point of intimidation. Agatha had always tried to convince herself beauty was pointless because it was temporary. Here was proof it lasted forever. The teachers tried to disguise their nudges and whispers upon seeing the dripping wet, misplaced student, but Agatha was used to catching these things. Then she noticed one who wasn't like the rest. Haloed against a stained glass window with a shamrock green suit, silver hair and shiny hazel eyes, he beamed down at her, as if she completely belonged. Agatha reddened. Anyone who thought she belonged here was a loon. Turning away, she took comfort in the glowering girls around her, who clearly hadn't forgiven her for the incident in the hall.
"Where are the boys?" Agatha heard one ask another as the girls filed in front of three enormous floating nymphs with neon hair and lips who handed out their schedules, books, and robes. As Agatha followed the line behind them, she had a better look at the majestic stair room. The wall opposite her had an enormous pink-painted E with lovingly drawn angels and sylphs fluttering around its edges. The other three walls had painted letters too, spelling out the word E-V-E-R in pink and blue. The four spiral staircases were arranged symmetrically at the corners of each wall, lit by high stained glass windows. One of the two blue flights had Honor tattooed upon its baluster, along with glass etchings of knights and kings, while the other read Valor, decorated with blue reliefs of hunters and archers. The two pink staircases had Purity and Charity emblazoned in gold, along with delicate friezes of sculpted maidens, princesses, and kindly animals. In the center of the room, alumni portraits blanketed a soaring crystal obelisk that reached from milky marble floor to domed sunroof. Higher up on the obelisk were gold-framed portraits of students who became princes and queens after graduation. In the middle were silver frames for those who found lesser fates as jaunty sidekicks, dutiful housewives, and fairy godmothers. And near the bottom of the pillar, flecked with dust, were bronze-framed underachievers who had ended up as footmen and servants. But regardless of whether they became a snow queen or a chimney sweep, Agatha saw these students shared the same beautiful faces, kind smiles, and soulful eyes. Here in a glass palace in the middle of the woods, the best of life had gathered in service of good. And here she was, Miss Miserable, in service of graveyards and farts. Agatha waited with bated breath until she finally reached a pink-haired nymph. "There's been a mix-up," she panted, dripping water and sweat. "It's my friend Sophie who's supposed to be here." The nymph smiled. "I tried to stop her from coming,
Agatha said, voice quickening with hope. But I confused the bird and now I'm here and she's in the other tower, but she's pretty and likes pink and I'm... Well, look at me. I know you need students, but Sophie's my best friend, and if she stays, then I have to stay, and we can't stay. So please help me find her so we can go home. The nymph handed her a piece of parchment. Agatha of Woods Beyond. Good. First year. Purity Tower, 51. Session 1. Beautification. Faculty, Professor Emma Anemone. 2. Princess Etiquette, Pollux. 3. Animal Communication, Princess Uma. 4. History of Heroism, Professor August Seder. 5. Lunch. 6. Good Deeds, Professor Clarissa Dovey. 7. Surviving Fairy Tales, Forest Group Number 3, Yuba the Gnome. Agatha stared at it, stupefied. But... A green-haired nymph thrust her a basket of books, some peeking out. The Privilege of Beauty, Winning Your Prince, The Recipe Book for Good Looks, Princess with a Purpose, Animal Speech 1, Barks, Neighs, and Chirps. Then a blue-haired nymph held up her uniform, an appallingly short pink pinafore, sleeves poofed with carnations, worn over a white lace blouse that seemed to be missing 3 buttons. Stunned, Agatha looked at future princesses around her, tightening their pink dresses. She looked at books that told her beauty was a privilege, that she could win a chiseled prince, that she could talk to birds. She looked at a schedule meant for someone beautiful, graceful, and kind. Then she looked up at a handsome teacher, still smiling at her, as if expecting the greatest things from Agatha of Gavaldon. Agatha did the only thing she knew how to do when faced with expectations. Up the blue honor staircase, through sea-green halls, she ran, fairies jangling furiously behind. Hurtling through halls, scrambling upstairs, she had no time to take in what she was seeing. Floors made of jade, classrooms made of candy, a library made of gold. Until she reached the last staircase and surged through a frosted glass door, onto the tower roof. In front of her, the sun lit up a breathtaking open-air topiary of sculptured hedges. Before Agatha could even see what the sculptures were of, fairies smashed through the door, shooting sticky golden webs from their mouths to catch her. She dove to elude them, crawling like a bug through the colossal hedges. Finding her feet, she sprinted and leapt onto the tallest sculpture of a muscular prince raising a sword high above a pond. She scaled the leafy sword to its prickling tip, kicking away swarming fairies. But soon there were too many, and just as they spat their glittering nets, Agatha lost her grip and crashed into the water. When she opened her eyes, she was completely dry. The pond must have been a portal, because she was outside now, in a crystal blue archway. Agatha looked up and froze. She was at the end of a narrow stone bridge that stretched through thick fog into the rotted tower across the lake. A bridge between the two schools. Tears stung her eyes. Sophie. She could save Sophie.
Agatha!
Agatha squinted and saw Sophie running out of the fog.
Sophie!
Arms outstretched, the two girls dashed across the bridge, crying each other's name. They slammed into an invisible barrier and ricocheted to the ground. Dazed by pain, Agatha watched in horror as wolves dragged Sophie by the hair back to evil.
You don't understand!
Sophie screamed, watching fairies snare Agatha.
It's all a mistake!
There are no mistakes, a wolf growled.
They could speak after all. Chapter 4. The Three Witches of Room 66. Sophie wasn't sure why 6 wolves needed to punish her instead of 1, but she assumed it was to make a point. They bound her to a spit, stuffed an apple in her mouth, and paraded her like a banquet pig through the 6 floors of Malice Hall. Lining the walls, new students pointed and laughed. But laughs turned to frowns when they realized this freak in pink would be one of their bunkmates. The wolves towed whimpering Sophie past rooms 63, 64, 65, then kicked open room 66 and flung her in. Sophie skidded until her face smacked into a warted foot.
"I told you we'd get her," said a sour voice.
Still tied to the spit, Sophie looked up at a tall girl, with greasy black hair streaked red, black lipstick, a ring in her nose, and a terrifying tattoo of a buck-horned, red-skulled demon around her neck. The girl glared at Sophie, black eyes flinting.
"She even smells like an Ever."
"The fairies will retrieve it soon enough," said a voice across the room.
Sophie swung her head to an albino girl with deathly white hair, white skin, and hooded red eyes, feeding stew from a cauldron to 3 black rats.
"Pity. We could slit its throat and hang it as a hall ornament."
"How rude," said a third girl. Sophie turned to a smiley brown-haired girl on the bed, round as a hot air balloon, chocolate ice pop in each stumpy fist.
"Besides, it's against the rules to kill other students."
"How about we just maim her a bit?" said the albino.
"I think she's refreshing," said the plump one, biting into the ice pop. "Not every villain has to smell and look depressed."
"She's not a villain,"
the albino and the tattooed girl snapped in unison. As she wriggled from her ropes, Sophie craned her neck up and had her first full view of the room. Once upon a time, it might have been a nice, cozy suite before someone set it on fire. The brick walls were burnt to cinders, black and brown scorch marks ripped across the ceiling, and the floor was buried beneath an inch of ash. Even the furniture looked toasted. But as her eyes searched, Sophie realized there was an even bigger problem with the room.
"Where's the mirror?" she gasped.
"Let me guess," the tattooed girl snorted. "It's Bella, or Ariel, or Anastasia."
"It looks more like a buttercup or a sugar plum," said the albino.
"Or a Clarabelle, or a rose red, or willow by the sea."
"Sophie," Sophie stood in a cloud of soot. "My name is Sophie. I'm not a villain. I'm not an it. And yes, I clearly don't belong here, so..." The albino and the tattooed girl were doubled over laughing.
"Sophie," the second cackled. "It's worse than anyone could have imagined."
"Anything named Sophie doesn't belong here," the albino wheezed. "It belongs in a cage."
"I belong in the other tower," said Sophie, trying to stay above their cattiness. "Which is why I need to see the schoolmaster."
"I need to see the schoolmaster," the albino mimicked. "How about you jump out the window and see if he catches you?"
"You all have no manners," snarfled the round girl, mouth full. "I'm Dot, this is Hester," she said, pointing at the tattooed girl. "And this ray of sunshine," she said, pointing at the albino, "is Anadil." Anadil spat on the floor.
"Welcome to room 66. said Dot, and with a swish of her hand swept the ashes off the unclaimed bed.
Sophie winced at moth-eaten sheets with ominous stains.
"Appreciate the welcome, but I really should be going," she said, backing against the door. "Might you direct me to the schoolmaster's office?"
"Princes must be so confused when they see you," said Dot. "Most villains don't look like princesses."
"She's not a villain,"
Anadil and Hester groaned.
"Do I have to make an appointment to see him?" pressed Sophie. "Or do I send him a note, or..."
"You could fly, I suppose," Dot said, pulling 2 chocolate eggs from her pocket.
but the stimps might eat you.
Stimps? Asked Sophie.
Those birds that dropped us off, love, garbled Dot as she chewed. You'd have to get past them, and you know how they hate villains.
For the last time, shot Sophie, I'm not a vil...
Sounds rang in the stairwell. Sugary jingling, so dainty, so delicate, it could only be...
Fairies. They were coming for her.
Sophie suppressed a scream. She dared not tell the girls her rescue was imminent. Who knows how serious they were about making her a hall decoration? She backed against the door and listened to the jingles grow louder.
I don't know why people think princesses are pretty, Hester said, picking a wart on her toe. Their noses are so small, like little buttons you want to pop off.
Fairies on our floor?
Sophie wanted to hop up and down. As soon as she got to the good castle, she would take the longest bath of her life.
And their hair's always so long,
Annadil said, dangling a dead mouse for the rat's dessert.
Makes me want to pull it all out.
Just a few rooms away now.
And those phony smiles, Hester said.
And that obsession with pink, said Annadil.
Fairies next door?
Can't wait to kill my first one, said Hester.
Today's as good a day as any,
Annadil said.
They're here?
Sophie swelled with joy. New school, new friends, new life. But the fairies flew past her room. Sophie's heart imploded. What happened? How could they miss her? She lunged past Annadil for the door, threw it open to a flash of wolf fur. Sophie jolted back in shock, and Hester slammed the door.
You'll get all of us punished, Hester growled.
But they were here. They were looking for me, Sophie cried.
Are you sure we can't kill her?
Said Annadil, watching her rats devour the mouse.
So... Where in the woods do you come from, love?
Dot asked Sophie, inhaling a chocolate frog.
I don't come from the woods, Sophie said impatiently and peeped through the keyhole.
The wolves had no doubt scared the fairies away. She needed to get back to the bridge and find them. But right now there were three wolves guarding the hall, eating a meal of roasted turnips from cast-iron plates.
Wolves eat turnips? With forks?
But there was something else odd on the wolves' plates. Fairies scavenging food from the beasts. Sophie's eyes widened in shock. A cute fairy boy glanced up at her.
He sees me. Clasping her hands, Sophie mouthed, Help!
Through the glass. The fairy boy smiled with understanding and whispered in a wolf's ear. The wolf looked up at Sophie, and shattered her keyhole with a savage kick. Sophie stumbled back, hearing a chorus of airy giggles and growling laughs. The fairies had no intention of rescuing her. Sophie's whole body shook, about to explode into sobs. Then she heard a throat clear and turned. Three girls gaped with identically confused expressions.
What do you mean, you... Don't come from the woods, said Hester.
Sophie was in no state to answer dumb questions, but now these goons were her only hope to find the schoolmaster.
I come from Gavaldon, she said, stifling tears. You three seem to know a lot about this place, so I'd be thankful if you could tell me where...
Is that near the Murmuring Mountains? Asked Dot.
Only Nevers live in the Murmuring Mountains, you fool, Hester groused.
Near Rainbow Gale, I bet, said Annadil. That's where the most annoying Evers come from.
Sorry, I'm lost already, Sophie frowned. Evers? Nevers?
A sheltered Rapunzel locked in a tower type, Annadil said. Explains everything.
Evers are what we call good-doers, love, Dot said to Sophie.
You know, all their nonsense about finding happily ever after.
So that makes you nevers? Said Sophie, remembering the lettered columns in the stair room.
Short for nevermore, Hester revelled. Paradise for evildoers. We'll have infinite power in nevermore.
Control time and space, said Anadil.
Take new forms, said Hester.
Splinter our souls.
Conquer death.
Only the wickedest villains get in, said Anadil.
And the best part, said Hester, no other people. Each villain gets their own private kingdom.
Eternal solitude, said Anadil.
Sounds like misery, said Sophie.
Other people are misery, said Hester.
Agatha would love it here, Sophie murmured. Gavaldon. Is that by Pifflepuff Hills? Dot said airily.
Oh, for goodness sakes, it's not near anything, Sophie moaned.
She held up her schedule. Sophie of Woods Beyond at its top. Gavaldon's beyond the woods, surrounded by it on all sides.
Woods Beyond, said Hester.
Who's your king? Asked Dot.
We don't have a king, Sophie said.
Who's your mother?
Asked Anadil.
She's dead, Sophie said.
And your father? Asked Dot.
He's a mill worker. These questions are quite personal.
And what fairy tale family is he from?
Anadil asked.
And now they're just plain odd. No one's family is a fairy tale. He's from a normal family with normal faults, like every one of your fathers.
I knew it,
Hester said to Anadil.
Knew what? Said Sophie.
Readers are the only ones this stupid,
Anadil said to Hester. Sophie's skin burned.
I'm sorry, but I'm not the stupid one if I'm the only person here who can read. So why don't you look in the mirror, that is, if you could actually find one?
Reader? Why didn't anyone here seem homesick? Why did they all swim towards the wolves in the moat instead of fleeing for their lives? Why didn't they cry for their mothers or try to escape the snakes at the gate? Why did they all know so much about this school? What fairy tale family is he from? Sophie's eyes found Hester's nightstand. Next to a vase of dead flowers, a claw-shaped candle, and a stack of books, Outsmarting Orphans, Why Villains Fail, Frequent Witch Mistakes, was a knurled wooden picture frame. Inside was a child's clumsy painting of a grotesque witch in front of a house made of gingerbread and candy.
Mother was naive, said Hester, picking up the frame.
Her face struggled with the memory.
An oven, please. Stick them on a grill. Avoids complications.
Her jaw hardened.
I'll do better.
Sophie's eyes shifted to Anadil, and her stomach plummeted. Her favorite storybook ended with a witch rolled in a barrel of nails until all that remained was her bracelet made of little boy's bones. Now that bracelet was clasped on her roommate's wrist.
Does know her witches, doesn't she?
Anadil leered.
Granny would be flattered.
Sophie whirled to a poster above Dot's bed, a handsome man in green screaming as an executioner's axe sliced into his head. Wanted, Robin Hood, dead or alive, preferably dead, by order of Sheriff of Nottingham.
Daddy promised to let me have first swing, Dot said.
Sophie looked at her three bunkmates in horror. They didn't need to read the fairy tales. They came from them. They were born to kill.
A princess and a reader, Hester said. The two worst things a human can be.
Even the Evers don't want her, said Anadil. Or the fairies would have come by now.
But they have come, cried Sophie. I'm good.
Well, you're stuck here, dearie,
Hester said, plumping Sophie's pillow with a kick.
So if you want to stay alive, best try to fit in.
Fit in with witches? Fit in with cannibals?
No! Listen to me, Sophie begged. I'm good.
You keep saying that.
In a flash, Hester seized her by the throat and pinned her over the open window.
And yet, there's no proof.
I donate corsets to homeless hags. I go to church every Sunday.
Sophie howled above the fatal drop.
No sign of fairy godmother, Hester said. Try again.
I smile at children. I sing to birds, Sophie choked. I can't breathe.
No sign of Prince Charming either, said Annadil, grabbing her legs. Last chance.
I made friends with a witch. That's how good I am.
And still no fairies,
Annadil said to Hester as they lifted her up.
She belongs here, not me,
Sophie wailed.
No one knows why the schoolmaster brings you worthless freaks into our world, hissed Hester, but there can only be one reason. He's a fool.
Ask Agatha. She'll tell you. She's the villain.
You know, Annadil, no one's told us the rules yet,
Hester said.
So they can't punish us for breaking them.
Annadil grinned. They lifted Sophie over the edge.
One, said Hester.
No,
Sophie shrieked.
Two.
You want proof? I'll give you proof,
Sophie screamed.
Three.
Look at me and look at you.
Hester and Annadil dropped her. Stunned, they stared at each other, then at Sophie, hunched on the bed, gulping tearful breaths.
Told you she was a villain,
Dot chirped, and bit into fudge. A commotion clamoured outside the room, and the girls' heads swiveled to the door. It flew open with a crack, and three wolves thundered in, grabbed them by the collars, and hurled them into a stampede of black-robed students. Students rammed and elbowed each other. Some fell beneath the herd and couldn't get back up. Sophie clung to the wall for her life.
Where are we going?
She yelled to Dot.
The school for good, Dot said. For the welcoming...
An ogreish boy kicked her forward. The school for good. Flooding with hope, Sophie followed the hideous herd down the stairs, primping her pink dress for her first meeting with her true classmates. Someone seized her arm and threw her against the banister. Dazed, she looked up at a vicious white wolf, who held up a black uniform reeking of death. He bared his teeth in a shiny grin.
No,
Sophie gasped. So the wolf took care of matters himself. Though the princesses of purity were all bunked in threes, Agatha ended up with her own room. A pink glass staircase connected all five floors of Purity Tower, spiraling in a carved replica of Rapunzel's endless hair. The door to Agatha's fifth floor room had a glittery sign covered in hearts, Welcome, Rena, Millicent, Agatha. But Rena and Millicent didn't stay long. Rena, blessed with luscious Arabian skin and brilliant grey eyes, laboured to move her enormous trunk into the room, only to find Agatha and move it right back out.
She just looks evil, Agatha heard her sob. I don't want to die.
Move in with me, she heard Beatrix say. The fairies will understand.
And indeed, the fairies did understand. And they understood when red-haired Millicent, with an upturned nose and thin eyebrows, feigned a fear of heights and demanded a room on a lower floor. And so Agatha was alone, which made her feel right at home. The room, however, made her feel anxious. Massive, jeweled mirrors glared back from pink walls. Elaborate murals flaunted beautiful princesses kissing dashing princes.
Arching over each bed was a white silk canopy, shaped like a royal carriage, and a glorious fresco of clouds blanketed the ceiling tiles, with smiling cupids shooting love arrows from puffy perches. Agatha moved as far as she could from all of it and crouched in the window nook, black dress bunched against pink wall. Through the window, she could see the sparkling lake around the good towers turn into sludgy moat midway across to protect the evil ones. Halfway Bay, the girls had called it. Deep in the fog, the thin stone bridge reached across the waters to connect the two schools. But this was all in front of the two castles. What was behind them? Curious, Agatha climbed onto the window ledge, clinging to a glass beam. She glanced down at the charity tower below, reaching up with its sharp pink spire. One wrong move and she'd be skewered like lamb meat. Agatha tiptoed to the side of the ledge, craned her head around the corner, and almost fell from surprise. Behind the school for good and evil was a massive blue forest. Trees, bushes, flowers bloomed in every shade of blue, from iceberg to indigo. The lush blue grove unfolded for quite a distance, connecting the yards of both schools, before it was fenced on all sides by tall gold gates. Beyond the gates, the forest returned to green and stretched into dark oblivion. As Agatha slid back, she saw something in front of the school, rising from Halfway Bay. It was right at the midpoint, where the waters balanced between sludge and sparkle. She could barely see it through the fog, a tall, thin tower of glinting silver brick. Fairies buzzed around the spire in droves, while wolves with crossbows stood watch on wooden planks that jutted from the base of the tower into the water. What were they guarding? Agatha squinted at the top of the sky-high tower, but all she could see was a single window, shrouded by clouds. Then light caught the window, and she saw it, silhouetted in sun, the crooked shape that had kidnapped them. Her shoe slipped and her body pitched forward over deadly charity. Flailing, she grabbed the window beam just in time and crashed back into the room. Agatha clutched her bruised tailbone, whipped around, but the shadow was gone. Agatha's heart thumped faster. Whoever brought them here was in that tower. Whoever was in that tower could fix the mistake and send them home. But first, she needed to rescue her best friend. A few minutes later, Agatha shrank from a mirror. The sleeveless pink uniform showed off parts of her white, scrawny body that had never seen light. The lace collar gave away the rash that spread across her neck whenever she felt anxious. The carnations lining the sleeves made her sneeze, and the matching pink high heels teetered like stilts. But the foul outfit was her only chance to escape. Her room was on the opposite end from the stairwell. To get back to the bridge, she needed to glide through the hall without being noticed and slip down the stairs. Agatha set her jaw. You have to blend. She took a deep breath and cracked open the door. 50 beautiful girls in pink pinafores packed the hallway, giggling, gossiping, trading dresses, shoes, bags, bangles, creams, and anything else they had brought in their gigantic trunks, while fairies buzzed between, trying in vain to round them up for the welcoming. Through the hubbub, Agatha glimpsed stairs at the other end, a confident stroll, and she'd be gone before they saw her. But she couldn't move. It had taken her whole life to make a single friend, and here these girls had become best friends in minutes, as if making friends was the simplest thing in the world. Agatha prickled with shame. In this school for good, where everyone was supposed to be kind and loving, she had still ended up alone and despised. She was a villain, no matter where she went. She slammed the door, ripped petals from her sleeve, tore off her pink heels and hurled them through the window. She slumped against the wall and closed her eyes. "Get me out of here." She opened her eyes and glimpsed her ugly face in the jeweled mirror. Before she could turn away, her eyes caught something else in her reflection. A ceiling tile with a smiling Cupid, slightly dislodged. Agatha slipped her feet back into her hard black clumps. She climbed up the bed canopy and pulled the tile away, revealing a dark vent above the room. She gripped the edges of the hole and swung one leg up into the vent, then the other, until she found herself perched on a narrow platform inside the chute. She crawled through darkness, hands and knees blindly shuffling along cold metal, until metal suddenly turned to air. This time, she couldn't save herself. Falling too fast to scream, Agatha whizzed through chutes, ping-ponged through pipes, and slid down vents until she somersaulted through a grate and landed on a beanstalk. She hugged the thick green trunk, thankful she was still in one piece. But as she looked around, Agatha saw she wasn't in a garden or forest or anywhere else a beanstalk is supposed to be. She was in a dark room, with high ceilings, filled with paintings, sculptures, and glass cases. Her eyes found the frosted doors in the corner, gilded words etched in glass. "The Gallery of Good." Agatha inched down the beanstalk until her clumps touched marble floor. A mural blanketed the long wall with a panoramic view of a soaring gold castle and a dashing prince and beautiful princess wedded beneath its gleaming arch, as thousands of spectators jingled bells and danced in celebration. Blessed by a brilliant sun, the virtuous couple kissed, while baby angels hovered above, showering them with red and white roses. High above the scene, shiny gold block letters peeked out from behind clouds, stretching from one end of the mural to the other. "Ever after." Agatha grimaced. She had always mocked Sophie for believing in happily ever after. Who wants to be happy all the time? But looking at the mural, she had to admit the school did a spookily good job of selling the idea. She peered into a glass case, holding a thin booklet of flowery handwriting with a plaque next to it. "Snow White, Animal Fluency Exam, Letitia of Maidenvale." In the next cases, she found the blue cape of a boy who became Cinderella's prince, Red Riding Hood's dorm pillow, the little match girl's diary, Pinocchio's pajamas, and other remnants of star students who presumably went on to weddings and castles. On the walls, she scanned more drawings of Ever After by former students, a school history exhibit, banners celebrating iconic victories, and a wall labeled Class Captain, stacked with portraits of students from each class. The museum got darker as it went on, so Agatha used one of her matches to light a lamp. That's when she saw the dead animals. Dozens of taxidermied creatures loomed over her, stuffed and mounted on rosy pink walls. She dusted off their plaques to find the booted Master Cat, Cinderella's favorite rat, Jack's sold-off cow, stamped with the names of children who weren't good enough to become heroes or sidekicks or servants. No happily ever after for this lot, just hooks in a museum. Agatha felt their eerie, glass-eyed stares and turned away. Only then did she see the plaque gleaming on the beanstalk, Holden of Rainbow Gale. That wretched plant had once been a boy. Agatha's blood ran cold. All these stories she had never believed in, but they were painfully real now. In 200 years, no kidnapped child had ever made it back to Gavaldon. What made her think she and Sophie would be the first? What made her think they wouldn't end up a raven or a rosebush? Then she remembered what made them different from all the rest. "We have each other." They had to work together to break this curse, or they'd both end up fossils of a fairy tale. Agatha found her attention drawn to a corner nook with a row of paintings by the same artist depicting the same scenes. Children reading storybooks in hazy, impressionistic colours. As she neared the paintings, her eyes grew wider, because she recognised where all these children were. They were in Gavaldon. She moved from first painting to last, with reading children set against the familiar hills and lake, crooked clock tower and rickety church, even the shadow of a house on Graves Hill. Agatha felt stabs of homesickness. She had mocked the children as batty and delusional, but in the end, they had known what she hadn't, that the line between stories and real life is very thin indeed. Then she came to the last painting, which wasn't like the others at all. In this one, raging children heaved their storybooks into a bonfire in the square and watched them burn. All around them, the dark forest went up in flames, filling the sky with violent red and black smoke. Staring at it, Agatha felt a chill up her spine. Voices. She dove behind a giant pumpkin carriage, hitting her head on a plaque. Heinrich of Netherwood. Agatha gagged. Two teachers entered the museum. An older woman, in a chartreuse high-necked dress, speckled with iridescent green beetle wings, and a younger woman, in a pointy-shouldered purple gown that slunk behind her. The woman in chartreuse had a grandmotherly beehive of white hair, but luminous skin and calm brown eyes. The woman in purple had black hair, yanked in a long braid, amethyst eyes, and bloodless skin stretched over bones like a drum.
"He's tampering with the tales, Clarissa," the one in purple said.
"The schoolmaster can't control the story in Lady Lesso," Clarissa returned.
"He's on your side, and you know it,"
Lady Lesso seethed.
"He's not on anyone's side," Clarissa stopped short.
So did Lady Lesso. Agatha saw what they were looking at. The last painting.
"I see you've welcomed another of Professor Sader's delusions," Lady Lesso said.
"It is his gallery," Clarissa sighed.
Lady Lesso's eyes flashed. Magically, the painting tore off the wall and landed behind a glass case, inches from Agatha's head.
"This is why they're not in your school's gallery," said Clarissa.
"Anyone who believes the reader prophecy is a fool," hissed Lady Lesso, "including the schoolmaster."
"A schoolmaster must protect the balance," Clarissa said gently. "He sees readers as part of that balance, even if you and I cannot understand."
"Balance," scoffed Lady Lesso. "Then why hasn't evil won a tale since he took over? Why hasn't evil defeated good in 200 years?
"Perhaps my students are just better educated," said Clarissa.
Lady Lesso glowered and walked away. Swishing her finger, Clarissa moved the painting back into place and scurried to keep up.
"Maybe your new reader will prove you wrong," she said.
Lady Lesso snorted.
"I hear she wears pink."
Agatha listened to their footsteps go quiet. She looked up at the dented painting. The children, the bonfire, Gavaldon burning to the ground. What did it all mean? Twinkly flutters echoed through the air. Before she could move, glowing fairies burst in, searching every crevice like flashlights. Far across the museum, Agatha saw the doors through which the two teachers had left. Just when the fairies reached the pumpkin, she sprinted for it. The fairies squealed in surprise as she slid between three stuffed bears, threw open the doors. Pink-dressed classmates streamed through the foyer in two perfect lines. As they held hands and giggled, the best of friends, Agatha felt familiar shame rise. Everything in her body told her to shut the door again and hide. But this time, instead of thinking of all the friends she didn't have, Agatha thought about the one she did. The fairies swooped in a second later, but all they found were princesses on their way to a welcoming. As they hovered furiously above, hunting for signs of guilt, Agatha slipped into the pink parade, put on a smile, and tried to blend.